The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Thanks for downloading Talk is Jericho. Today, part two with the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff together with me, and it gets a little heavy this time. We're going to talk about the substance abuse issues they both fought and beat. They're both clean and sober, better than ever. But we'll also get some great stories from their days in Team Extreme with Lita and what they're doing now in TNA and around the world. Round two with Matt and Jeff Hardy coming up. I've also got two very special guests today, literary experts Cheyenne and Sierra Irvin, giving the reports on all the latest books that you might want to check out. So much cool stuff, and we'll get to all of it. But first, we got to get your fantasy football issues sorted out. There's only one solution. You know what it is. It's DraftKings.com. That's right. DraftKings.com is awarding ginormous cash prizes, humongous cash prizes every single week. It's probably why they're America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. You don't have to remember to set your lineup every week. You don't have to figure out who's injured and not playing or who has a bye week. At DraftKings.com, you can stack your lineup and win instant cash. If you go to DraftKings.com right now, enter the promo code Y2J. You'll get free entry in a DraftKings Millionaire Maker event. Yeah, first place takes home $1 million. That's right. Enter Y2J at DraftKings.com for a free shot at becoming the world's next millionaire. So don't let your season-long fantasy team get you down. Get some instant gratification and maybe even some instant cash every week at DraftKings.com. And remember, enter Y2J for free entry into the Millionaire Maker event. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires.
The following program is a podcast1.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of Honda and rock and roll. Ooh, ow! The spell you run down will be broken by Chris Jericho. And it's Friday.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday.
The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride.
Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbell.
Woo! Ticka-ticka-ting. On a sklong gong gong gong, sklong gong 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 bong, a glong gong sklong, don't on gong a gong, a sklong gong gong, ban on the sklong, ban on out, ban on out, ow, 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 son of a bitch, and ow, 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 son of a bitch, and ow, ban on out, ow, woo, bow. Woo! Yeah, it's an old classic, a little Nazareth, rocking it with the cowbell. It's called Hair of the Dog. I always thought that song was called Son of a Bitch, right? So glad to have you here. Jericho-holics, how in the hell are you? Got another great show with Matt and Jeff Hardy coming up. Both had their fair share of substance abuse issues, but they've both come out on the other side. They are outstanding citizens, people to look up to in this day and age. We're going to ask them about Team Extreme and Lita, about being split up as a tag team, that one of the greatest tag teams of all time at that, and going their own ways in singles matches. We'll talk about their departures from the WWE and how things are going for them nowadays in TNA on the independents. Both of them got so much things going on. A lot of charisma, a lot of creativity between these two lads. Lots more with the Hardy Boys with a Z. I've also got two special guests. Literary experts Cheyenne and Sierra Irvin will be here to give you their reports, their reviews of the latest in books that are available today. So we've got that coming up. It's going to be a huge show. Before we get into it, I want to thank all of you for listening. I know you got a lot of schwasses in podcasts today, and I appreciate the fact that you schwaz my podcast. I want to thank you also for doing your Amazon shopping through my links at podcastone.com. It's the easiest way to support the show. Amazon is a proud sponsor of Talk is Jericho, and every time you shop at Amazon through my link, Amazon gives a small percentage of your purchase back to the show to help us cover production costs. You know, you got to pay for the studio time, the bandwidth, everything that goes into doing this show for you for free for twice a week. You know, you can get on Amazon, right? You can get Fozzy's new album, Do You Want to Start a War? You can also pre-order my new book, my third book, The Best in the World at What? I Have No Idea. That drops on October 13th, but you can pre-order it now on Amazon. But here's the truth about using my Amazon links. You don't have to buy anything if you don't want to. Won't cost you anything extra if you do decide to pick something up. There's no hidden charges. There's no fees. You can buy whatever you were planning to buy and help the show out in the process. No purchase too big or too small. Every little bit counts. Every little thing you buy is magic. Every little thing you buy is cool. Every little thing you buy is tragic. Everything you buy just breaks the rules. Yeah, just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I've got Amazon links for the USA, the UK, and Canada, bookmark it as well so you can get to these links in one easy click. All right. Got a lot of cool stuff going on. My chin is actually hurting as the skin heals from having the 5 stitches in it. I can't wait to get these out, but I'll wait until after my last match in the WWE for this run at Night of Champions against Randy Orton. Very excited about that. Currently on tour with Fozzy and Theory of a Dead Man. We play tonight in San Antonio at Backstage Live. Saturday, we're in Shreveport, Louisiana for the big rock festival there, called Festapalooza for KTUX, then head over for Night of Champions, and then next Tuesday in Atlanta, Center Stage, all of those shows with Theory of a Dead Man. Also, we're doing headlining shows September 25th in Beckley at Munchies, September 28th in Parkersburg, West Virginia at the Sixpence, October 1st, Fort Wayne, Indiana, Pierre's, October 5th, New York City, Gramercy Theater. We are returning. Very, very excited about all these cool things that I have coming up and a lot more in the pipeline. Thank you for joining me. And all of you always request to hear Ash the Fish Expert. But what you didn't know, Ash, of course, is my son. He does a great job as the fish expert here on Talk is Jericho. But what you didn't know is my daughters, Cheyenne and Sierra, are literary experts. They are avid readers, and they are going to give you their reviews in the latest of books. Okay, welcome to Critics Corner, the number one place for book reviews in the world today, featuring literary experts Cheyenne Irvin.
Yo, what's up, peeps?
And CC Irvin, Sierra Irvin.
Yo, what's up, peeps? How you doing?
All right, we got a couple of street kids here, apparently. They have both read the bestsellers of the day, and they've written some reviews to give to you, the literary people out there, the fans of book reading. Why don't we start with you, Sierra? What book did you read?
I read How to Break Your Dragon's Heart by Cressida Cowell.
Okay. And read us your review.
Okay. The settings, even though these aren't real names, here they are, Burke and Berserk.
Wow. Burke and Berserk, okay.
And the main characters are Fishlegs, Hiccup, and Kamikaze. And Two-Face, who is Hiccup's dragon, which I'll tell you about a little later in the story.
Okay. So what happens in the book?
In this book, they go on Berserk, looking for their dear friend Kamikaze. They look and search, and it turns out she's inside a tree. They look around and get trapped by these Berserks, which is their Viking name. And they get trapped there for days and get fed to the beast. The beast is green, and it turns out to be the Dragon Furious, the brother of Hiccup Houndress Haddock II and Hiccup Houndress Haddock III.
So Hiccup is the good dragon?
He's the good dragon person. Trainer.
A good person.
Yes, and he speaks Dragonos, which is dragon language.
And it's
Norse in dragon language, means they can talk human language, like Stormfly, Kamikaze Dragon, a Moo Dragon.
And that's, I suppose, the only way Toothless can understand Hiccup.
Oh, okay, so Toothless is the good dragon.
Yeah. Toothless and Stormfly and a whole bunch of Hiccup's friends' dragons are good. Oh, and one of my favorite dragons of Hiccup's, the Saber-Toothed Tiger, the One-Eyed.
The One-Eyed Saber-Toothed Tiger, that's a dragon?
Yes.
Wow, okay, so how does the story continue?
He sets the dragon Furious free, which no one should ever do. He rides it, then Furious the dragon turns on him. But Hiccup falls 300 feet, maybe. Hiccup calls Windwalker and Dragonos, and he catches him. He almost went into a ball of fire. Hiccup's arch enemy, Alvin the Treacherous, he is evil. And then Hiccup and Alvin start sword fighting.
Wow. Okay, so then how does the book end?
The book ends by everybody's happy they find Kamikaze. And then there's this hero called Humongous the Hotshot, the hero. And he marries this girl named Tantrum.
Wow. So this is part of a series of books, right?
Yes, all like Carissa Cowan. And now I am on the 9th book.
How many books is there?
There's 12. I mean, they're making a 12th one. And I'm so excited to read it. You know why?
Why?
Because my brother read this, Ash the Fish Expert. He read the series. And I can't wait to follow in his footsteps of reading. So maybe after I'm done with this, I'll read the same books he does.
Okay, so what do you give this book out of 10? What do you rate it?
I rate it not for children under 4 years old.
Okay.
Because it's very confusing when you're younger. And sometimes some parts are a little creepy. Like there's this picture that I think it's even creepy that I think littler
kids.
People would think is creepy too. So I think not for people under the age 4.
Okay. And what do you give it out of 10? You give it 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 1 out of 10?
How about 100 out of 10?
Wow.
What about the creepy picture? Tell us about it, Sierra.
Oh, well, it's the... Shai
taking over there?
It's the evil witch. In the 9th book that I told you I was reading, I saw it, and she came out of a cauldron. How scary is that? That big
wow,
pot that
big
witches
pot.
Get. And she was bony like a skeleton with long white hair.
Wow.
And she was blind, so her eyes looked like swirly things.
Okay.
And this is the creepiest part. She crawled on all fours like a beetle everywhere.
Ooh.
No walking on two.
That
is
creepy. Is that creepy, Shai Shai, too?
Yes.
Okay, so that's CC's review. That's a great review for How to Break a Dragon's Heart.
Before, I also have some things to tell you about.
Well, let's Shai Shai do her book review, and then you can hold that thought. You can tell us about
They're
it after.
They're just short little things.
Okay, well, say them quickly.
Okay, so three main ideas that I think is Hiccup set a dragon free with a key that unlocks all doors.
Mm-hmm.
Dishlegs got 5 pots of honey from the berserk bees, who are really berserk.
Mm-hmm.
Kamikaze got stuck inside a tree, and she got out of the tree in the very end. And my favorite part was when Hiccup rode a huge dragon. I mean, it was huge, like maybe 13 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
It's
wow.
So cool how books can make your imagination wild.
Good job, Cece. All right, let's go over to River Clan. Peace, peace, peace.
And I'll be back later.
Okay, well, you're not going anywhere. You're still sitting here. We got Cheyenne, the other literary expert here on Critics Corner today. And what book did you read and who wrote it, Shai?
Well, first of all, my nickname is Shai Shai, if you don't know it. And Ron Roy wrote this book, and it's called A Runaway Racehorse.
Okay.
And the main characters of this book is Dink, Josh, and Ruth Rose.
Josh, and Ruth Rose.
Mm-hmm. The horse's name is Whirlaway.
Okay, so what's the mystery that they're trying to solve?
Well, they're trying to solve what happened to Whirlaway because he actually ran away, not like to see his mom, he just ran away. But someone actually stole him.
Oh, okay.
They stole him because they knew he was the fastest horse in the land. So they traded him with this horse called Dancer.
Oh.
So to pretend Whirlaway was Dancer, they put shoe polish on him.
Oh, wow.
Which you use for your shoes.
Gotcha, to polish your shoes.
Dink and Josh wanted to go take a picture with the winner, which was actually Whirlaway, but they thought it was Dancer. So when they took a picture, at the end, they saw something black on Josh's shirt.
Uh-huh. And what was it?
It was the shoe polish, because the horse was leaning in right beside them, and Josh was like this close, and then the shoe polish revved off onto his collar.
Oh, so that proved that Josh stole him?
No.
Oh.
Josh is one of the good guys. The one who stole him was Mr. Forrest's friend. And if you don't know who Mr. Forrest is, he's the owner of Whirlaway.
Oh, okay. So he was the one that stole the horse.
No, his friend.
Oh, his friend was the one that stole the horse.
his friend that sold him Whirlaway and had his mom.
Oh.
In the farm. And that's where Whirlaway grew up, because he got out of the mom's stomach, and she
gotcha.
Was still in there until his friend sold him to Forrest.
This is A to Z Mysteries, which means there's a mystery for every letter of the alphabet. What letter of the alphabet is this?
It is
W?
R.
Oh, R, okay.
I got it from my teacher, who's Mrs. Duggar.
Okay, Mrs. Duggar. Shout out to Mrs. Duggar. So what do you give this book out of 10? You give it 1 out of 10. You give it 10 out of 10.
How about 1,000 out of 10?
1,000 out of 10. Wow. So is this the best book you've ever read?
Yeah.
Is Josh your favorite character, or is Dink? I like Dink.
I like Ruth Rose because she always stands up to herself, because Josh always like duels her and stuff, and she always stands up for herself and says yes, and she always wins.
Oh, she always wins?
Yeah.
Okay. What are you going to say, Cece?
All those people out there who love books to read, and if you're my age or Cheyenne's age, which we're both 8, and we're twins, identical twins, we would like you to read these series, A to Z Mysteries and How to Train Your Dragon. So if you can find any of those books, that'd be great. And if you love reading, just try the best you can to please find these books, and you'll be amazed what they can tell you. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, because our mom posts us a lot of stuff.
All right.
It's just going to be great. So if you see any of those books and if you like the sound of it, go on and buy them. Or
Thanks. You could see us tweeting when we're older.
All right, good job. Literary experts Cheyenne and Sierra Irvin. All right, how cute was that? Asking you to go to Google, go to Amazon and buy those books if you want to. A to Z Mysteries, and of course the How to Train Your Dragon series. I think I've got a modern day Partridge Family here. I got Ash the fish expert. I got Cheyenne and Sierra Irvin, the literary experts. If you like them and you want to hear more from all three of my experts, hit me up on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho and let me know what you think of all things on this podcast. All right, the Hardy Boys are next. But first, I got to say I'm loosened up and ready for my Night of Champions match on Sunday, the last match in my series, this current series, against Randy Orton. And the reason why I'm ready and limber is I've been doing my DDP yoga in between Fozzy shows and rehearsals. I'm ready to hit the ring on Sunday. And I'm not kidding when I say I'm still wrestling at the highest of level because of DDP yoga. I jumped off a cage at 43 years old on Raw a couple weeks ago, specifically because of DDP yoga. It really works. I don't think I'd still be able to get in the ring, and if I did be able to work, it wouldn't be at the level I'm at right now, and I don't think I'd be able to go on stage. I don't think I'd be able to do things I do if it wasn't for DDP yoga. Listen, it's a great program, and you'll be amazed how good you feel once you start getting into it. Age doesn't matter. Skill level, don't worry about it. Fitness level, doesn't matter. DDP yoga Great choice for everyone and anyone. And listen, because you are a Talk is Jericho fan, a Sexy Beast Talk is Jericho fan, DDP is giving you a great deal on the Max Pack, 15 workouts designed for any skill level. You get a nutrition guide, a poster to help you remember the 12 core positions of DDP yoga, and you'll get the workout on MP3 so you can exercise anywhere, anytime you want. How does that sound? Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of this special offer only available to the Sexy Beast Talk is Jericho listeners. ddpyoga.com/Jericho. But guess what? This offer is not going to last forever. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Take advantage of it now. You're not going to regret it. One more time, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. You can find this great deal as well by going to podcast1.com, clicking on the Keep Our Podcast free banner at the top of the page, then hitting the Talk is Jericho button. Listen, I want you to do what's right and get in the best shape of your life. I'm going to help you help yourself. DDP Yoga. Go check it out and do it right now.
When you're talking about the biggest names in pro wrestling, you're talking about podcast1.com.
Aha!
That's because 5 days a week, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Jim Ross, Goldberg, and Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Woohoo!
All hanging out with celebs and your favorite wrestlers, past, present, and future. Names like Shawn Michaels, Zeb Coulter, Mick Foley, Lita, Eric Bischoff, William Shatner, and Tony Stewart. Some of these names may not be officially wrestlers. So get inside the audio squared circle at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
Talk is Jericho.
All right, here we go. Round two with Matt and Jeff Hardy, the Hardy Boys. After you got over as the Hardy Boys with Michael Hayes in your corner, you guys became known as Team Extreme. It was about raising the bar every time. And then the TLCs started coming into play. Did you ever feel like... I remember WrestleMania in Anaheim. That was another show stealer. That was a three-way with the Dudleys, too. That was another good element to have with you guys as well. Did you ever feel like you know, we got to keep raising the bar and got to keep going crazier and crazier? I mean, is that kind of what the cycle you got into?
Yeah, we always did. And I think everyone does. I mean, as a performer, I'm sure you feel the same. You know, like you just know, like, there's something about your own personal pride and your own personal passion, which is sometimes great and sometimes... not so helpful, you know, with things in this business. But we always felt like we had to go out and we had to do something new, something different, something innovative. And probably the biggest letdown for us, you know, as professionals with the ladder match at this point was when we had the cage match in Pittsburgh where we won the tag team titles. We beat Edge and Christian in the cage. And we really beat each other up in this match. And the next night we went to State College. I'm sure you were on the show too. And it was the first night when we went from USA to the new network to TNN.
Right.
And we were just supposed to do a promo. And we were all really sore and beat up. Mentally, we weren't ready or prepared for it. And they said, hey, you guys have a 3-segment ladder match tonight.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
You know, and we're like, what? You know,
yeah, I remember
are you kidding me? Like, we're not in any kind of mental or physical state.
Yeah.
And I remember Pat Patterson sat us down. He said, guys, he said, you guys, you know, have mastered these matches. They love it. He said, you don't have to top what you've done before. You don't have to do anything crazy. Just go out and have like a solid, decent, regular match. And I remember like we were all upset. We're like, no, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. Like we have something, an image and like a legacy almost we have to protect if we're doing this match. Because, you know, every match we've done has been great and special. Even the one we have, the Forgotten TLC. You know,
right,
we went out and had a hell of a
match. That was another one. They just laid it on us.
Yeah. That was
hours
that was
before.
With less than 24 hours before notice. But, you know, this day we walked in the building and we found out we had it. And we were also disappointed because we knew our performances wouldn't be up to par because we were also beat up from the night before. But we still, you know, we made the most out of it that we could. And this maniac somehow taking a spear off the... I mean, like,
that
really...
That's crazy.
I mean, I feel like he's a cyborg. Still the things he does now. a match is airing on TNA when we're doing this. It'll be this Thursday. I mean, he jumped off the top turnbuckle and swantoned the bottom half of the stairs when Bobby Lashley moved and like hit it perfect. Like, he's still... I've never known anyone... I mean, he's been wrestling for 22, 23 years now. I've never known anyone to do the crazy things he's done with the consistency and you know, with the run and longevity that he's had. It blows my mind.
Is it just a daredevil attitude, Jeff?
Is
it fearlessness or
I'm just
going
to flash back to, like, before we did make it, I used to race motocross amateurly. Like, I was an amateur, and we were wrestling, too, and, like, I wanted to go pro in motocross, but, God, it cost so much money to race, and I just wasn't good enough to be professional in wrestling. I definitely felt that talent, so I went with wrestling. But I always compare those TLC matches to freestyle motocross. Like, how much more can these guys raise the bar, what they're doing on these bikes? I mean, you can't do, but like Travis Pastrana did a double backflip a few years ago. I mean, how can you continue to raise the bar? And with us, I mean, I don't think you can. You can just, you know, go out there, and there's going to be things from time to time that impress people. But man, when you're doing matches that good, I mean, just leave them there. You know, you're not don't ever worry about topping them. Just you know. Mm-hmm.
But you've done some stuff. I mean, both of you guys have. But the one that just popped in my head is I don't remember who it was. Someone was on the table, and it was like, I don't know, 15-foot ladder or whatever it was in the aisleway, and you climbed up the top and did the swanton from the top of the ladder in the aisleway down on top of the table. I mean,
yeah.
What's the just go for it and whatever happens happens, or is there some kind of a technical aspect to it, or how do you do that?
It's weird with me, man. Like I see things, you know, I have these visions and I feel that I can do them.
Mm-hmm.
And normally I do my best not to hesitate, and it's worked out so far. I'm just extremely lucky. But like there's weird things that I feel like I can't do that other people think it'd be easy to do. But
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, completely raising the bar as both guys did. Mm-hmm. How important was the addition to Lita to your team with Team Extreme? Because that was one of the most popular acts of the Attitude Era. You know, you still think about that, just like the three of you guys together. It really worked.
Yeah, I mean, it helped us out greatly just because myself and Jeff, we pretty much had, you know, all the kids as fans. We mm-hmm. had all the females as fans. You know, some of the guys that were the older guys, the 18 to 25, I don't know. These guys are, you know, they're little heartthrobs. Yeah,
yeah, sure, good-looking guys. Cool,
but once we had Lita and added her to the fold, then those fans came too. Mm-hmm. So it kind of helped us complete the demographic. We felt like we were getting everyone at that time. And then just to have a girl that emulated what we did, it was really a great package.
Yeah.
It really fit and it worked for everyone. And I really think it helped more than anything to bring everyone, you know, onto our bandwagon.
Right,
you know,
right.
The total demographic. Our group, Team Extreme, had something for every single fan.
Yeah, that's I loved that about the Attitude Era, too, is that everybody had an angle. Everybody had a character. Everybody had a gimmick. And everyone was over. Mm-hmm. And sure, it was based around, you know, Rock and Steve. Those were kind of the tent poles in Triple H. But the guys like you guys, Team Extreme and Edge and Christian and, you know, Jericho and Angle and you know, Benoit and Eddie, mm-hmm. all of us, I mean, that could be the best roster in wrestling history, was that early 2000 roster.
Absolutely, no doubt.
You know?
And even looking back, man, the more I think about it, and, you know, am I correct? I don't know. This is my theory in a lot of ways. I still look back and I go that wrestling was so hot and Steve and Rock were so on top and they knew nobody was going to be worried about who the top guys were or if the building was going to sell out because it was doing great business at that time. Then other people got attention, you know, like I remember you guys did some amazing stuff because they gave you attention and you got a spotlight, you got a stage, and same with us. Tag team wrestling was important again. I feel like now, even when I watch the product sometimes, they're just so worried about, is our top angle going to draw? Is it going to sell out? Or is it going to do great pay-per-view numbers? Is it going to help the network get where it needs to get? Whatever it is, you know, that's all they're concerned about because they have to be. You know, back in those days, they didn't have to worry about The Rock and Stone Cold because they were set.
Good
you
point.
Know, and now the acts that are underneath don't get the attention that we did back then, I feel like.
Because WWE's always been based around, it's a main event company
from
Vince's dad to Vince now. But when you had that locked in, then everything else, you're right, because Vince very much pays attention to what's going on top. But I think in those days, he could pay more attention to everything else because he'd have to worry so much about it.
Yeah, his tunnel vision didn't have to set in on like his main angle that was going to, you know, provide the main revenue for the company.
Yeah.
And now I think it does.
So when they did the split, I remember we did the brand split, moved from SmackDown, or there was a SmackDown team and a Raw team. And they remember Vince's big verdict was he was splitting up all the tag teams. And you guys got split up as well. Was that the first time that the Hardy Boys had ceased to exist, was when the brand split happened? Because I think you guys were still rolling up until then pretty much, right?
We were rolling. They tried to do a split with us at one point where I want to say myself and Lita were having issues. And like Jeff was kind of by her side. And like I remember there was one point where they wanted us to do a shot where you kissed her. Remember that?
Oh,
and you said you weren't going to do it because you weren't comfortable. You didn't like it.
You didn't want to do the kiss.
Yeah,
right.
Because
you guys were dating at the time, right?
Right. Yeah, yeah. So and then we ended up being reprimanded, like we were off TV for like 6 or 7
for
weeks.
For what? Because
we didn't go through with it. You know, although we still worked the house shows, we still did all
because
house
you wouldn't
shows.
Do the kiss, or because you wouldn't go through with the split.
A little bit of both, I think.
Really?
I think we had a match against one another. I remember we wrestled in San Diego, and I remember people weren't fans of the match, and I was so sick that day. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I was, like, extremely sick, and we had a match. It was supposed to be, like, not a vicious match, the first one of many, and I guess things worked out as they were supposed to because, you know, some fans were, like, disappointed internet fans were disappointed in the match, what it was. And then like we didn't want to fight against one another at that time because we thought we had a lot left to do as a tag team. And WCW was just starting to, I think they were getting ready to come if they hadn't at the time. And we realized like, God, if these guys come, there's not going to be anything for us to do really on our own.
You mean all the guys coming over?
Yeah, Vince bought the WCW, trying to invest in all these guys, get them over, whatever. And I still think we weren't ready to split at that time. When we finally did split and we did the deal where, you know, I went to SmackDown and Jeff stayed on Raw and I became Matt Hardy version one, I think that was the right timing. You know, before, you know, in the story, people really never liked seeing us fight one another.
I think so, yeah.
And I always believe that. You know, even when we did that angle like in 2008, 2009, and we went to WrestleMania 25, I thought it was a great match, but I don't think people believe ever, they won't, that we hate one another. Because our whole story, everything we've been built upon, is you have two kids from the middle of nowhere that, you know, had each other's back and chased the dream, and they made it, and they did it together. And I thought the jealousy thing, Matt being jealous of Jeff, would totally work. And I thought we did good when it first started, but I think we kind of jumped the shark, so to say, whenever they said, like, I burned his house
burned
down.
His house down.
That was just too much. Like, yeah. I even think, like, people were like, oh, come on.
Right.
You know, and I suggest that as well, because I had a pretty good, you know, pretty good grasp on what people bought and what they didn't buy at that time, you know, but they still wanted to go through it. And, you know, all you do is make the most out of whatever you have, so we tried to.
Going way back with the Kiss deal, I was starting to feel a little rebellious, and that was the first time I remember telling myself, man, this is when I can say, no, I'm not doing it, and it's going to be right. I mean, because I said to myself, I wasn't going to do it, and this is my chance, because I would do anything, basically, they wanted me to do, and I stood up for myself, and, you know, us, and I said no.
Now, what do you mean you're starting to feel rebellious?
As far as this is a chance I can say, no, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick to my gun. I'm not going to give in.
Right.
And it's probably, too, I mean, Jeff is...
Confidence, it kind of came over me a little bit.
Because you knew that you were on a roll.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he was on a roll, and he's always been on a roll. But Jeff's a sweetheart, and he's just so easy to get along with. And typically, I think people would feel like they could take advantage. We have this amazing performer in Jeff, and he's going to do whatever we want him to do. If you want, you know, we want this guy to go around. Yeah. Jeff's like, oh, it's no problem. I think he's just such a nice guy. People, you know, they buy into that, and they know that, and they're like, oh, well, he'll do whatever. But I think he was like, no, I'm not. I'm going to do what I want to do. I want to have an opinion. I want to have a voice.
I remember that even in matches, too, because you're so laid back and so easygoing. But I remember when we used to work either tag teams or singles, I'd put together matches to protect you and give you stuff because other people try not take advantage of you. Because you're not stupid, but Jeff will just do whatever. He'll do whatever we tell him to. And it's like, no, man, that's not the deal. He's cool, but he's not an idiot. Like, Jeff, go stand over there in the corner and wait. You know what I mean? Like, you could see how sometimes a certain mindset in this business, people will take advantage of that.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Definitely. I mean, a lot of times, you know, people will mistake kindness for weakness.
Right.
You know, in several ways. And I think sometimes that could be an issue with him, you know, And I think it was with both of us because we loved what we were doing so much. And I think I finally started realizing, like, no, come on. Like, you can't – we have to make this fair. We have to make this right for the segment, not just for one person.
Sure.
You know, and that's something I've always tried to pride myself on. Like, you know, my recent run I've done off and on with Ring of Honor, their bigger stuff, you know, they're just so – some of the people were blown away that how I try and do what's right for the segment. And you can do this because you're a perfect example of it. You know what I mean? You know how to go out and do what's best for everyone, but keep yourself over.
Right.
You know, and that's what blows people away. That's what, a lot of people don't get to that, don't evolve to that stage in this business. You know, and that's what it's all about. And it's just sometimes you have to keep people in check and make sure they do
that. Exactly. But when you did split up, though, you mentioned the Mattitude. That was great. The Sensei of Matt, Sensei of Mattitude, Matt Fax, Matt V. V1, V2,
very MFers. Yeah.
Matt Two Fathers. Matt strongly dislikes mustard. That's by far the most finely remembered Matt fact.
That was great, though. I mean, was that all your ideas?
You know, the whole idea, the Matt Hardy, the version one, Mattitude, that was all my stuff. Version one, initially, I had suggested to be a name for myself, Jeff, Edge, and Christian as a unit and work against DX after our ladder match, but they wouldn't put us together creatively, and I think DX didn't want to wrestle against us that time. I think they'd shut it down. You know, so version one, I was going to be like, we're the version one of the new wrestler going first in the 21st century. So I just put that in my back pocket and held on to it, and then once I turned heel when I went to SmackDown and split, I did that. And I had the idea for the entrance, but the Mad Facts, actually, I don't know if that was a Kevin Donner production, they threw that up, but then once they gave it to me and they suggested, I ran with it, and then I was, you know, turning in four or five every week. We'll pick a couple of these. There's some good ones. And it really was, man. It's real crazy, especially now that the network's out, how widely remembered those are. People love those.
Yeah. That's the best thing about that network is people will say, I saw this match between Jericho and Jeff or Jericho and Matt or Matt. Things you don't even remember doing.
Right, yeah. Right.
And now people are just watching this stuff. And every day I'm getting tweets. I saw this match, that match.
Same here.
It's pretty cool to have that your whole body of work in one place to be able to watch it whenever you want.
For sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. One of the funniest things, whenever the network launched and came back, I remember Tommy Dreamer, we were doing a show together, may have even been a House of Hardcore, but he's one of the guys I see a lot, you know, on my travels now. He said, Matt, he said, we can raise our booking price. Brother, we're back! The network's here! Typical Tommy Dreamer wrestling mindset.
Now, he's doing Mattitude on SmackDown. You're over on Raw. I remember they had you and Bubba together, because we worked you guys together for quite a few times. Had some great matches. How was that kind of teaming with, you know, somebody else other than your brother?
Yeah, it was strange, you know, at first, but I was kind of I guess that was the conflicted enigma back in those days. I was kind of trying to figure out who I was as a solo competitor, you know, and where I was going, what I wanted to do. But yeah, it was strange at first, but the more I did it, especially leading up to the Undertaker world title ladder match, I mean, that was like, that was, you know, it for me. I mean, like that moment where, oh, yeah, I can make it on my own and be great.
There's one thing, and I'm sure Matt will agree with it. There's certain people, and there's not many, that just have this X factor. And you've always had that. You don't even have to say anything or really do anything. You've never really been much of a talker.
Right.
But people just love you. You've just got this vibe and this air. And that's when you started to really get over as the singles performer, by just being yourself. People loved you, man. And like you said, to work with Undertaker, coming from the job guy who fell off the ropes, you know, 5 years earlier. How was that for you?
Oh, it was awesome, man. And finding your own, like, zone and way. I remember, like, not being afraid to, like, when I started using paint, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to paint my face crazy or wear this or that and just be myself. But, yeah, it was just it was so good for me as far as a confidence boost to know that I can make it on my own. And now, I mean, years later, I'm 36 years old now, and it's just that vibe is better than ever as far as me not being afraid to be unique and find something else to do. For example, I was painting my face for a while, you know, and then I was off for a month. I was coming back. I wanted to do something new, and I said to myself, man, nobody's ever really painted their neck before. Let me start painting my neck, and I'll just do my eyelids, and it was the coolest thing. I did that for a while. And now I'm kind of out of ideas, but I mean, as long as I can continue.
My favorite one you started doing recently is that you close your eyes and you've got eyeballs painted on your eyelids.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's freaky, man. That's cool.
It's the artist coming out for sure, like with the painting, the music, the wrestling, it's all kind of
Sure, it's art. You know, and wrestling is art. Like, people who don't understand that, anytime you create something out of nothing, that's art. And putting together a match is like, it's a painting. It's a canvas.
It's an art form. I mean, it's storytelling. It really is. And you know, something you said about Jeff, I mean, it really rings true with him more than anyone else. I mean, I could go out and try and be like he is or do what he is, but you can't. I mean, the thing is, I know my parameters, and you know yourself so well, and you have for a long time now. And I think in this business, as you continue to grow and learn as a performer, when you really understand what you are and your parameters, what you're good at, what you excel in, what you do best, and you know to kind of cater towards that, I mean, there's a victory in finding who you really are, because that's when you do your best work. And with him, it's just like he doesn't really have to put in the effort. He just has to be him, and he has to do what he would do normally, and that's what's so special about him. When people say that it factor, it's not like he has to go above and beyond to try.
No,
he just has to be himself.
It's there.
It's
yeah.
just there, you know, and there's just the things he does in day-to-day life is just special. He comes off as very special. That it factor is there.
Because you have the confidence and belief. It's like if you go see the Stones and watch Mick Jagger on stage, you know, if anybody else tried to do that, you'd look stupid.
Right.
But Mick is Mick. Ozzy's Ozzy. Jeff is Jeff. You just be you.
Right. And I've said that before. If I went out and tried to be Jeff,
right,
I would look dumb because I wouldn't come off
paint
as
your
real.
Face or something. It would look
I would
stupid.
Come off as artificial, as fake, as phony. And one of the best things I ever did was whenever I split from Jeff, because whenever we did the Hardy Boys together and we were like, you know, the Hardy Boys, the, you know, the guys who fear is only a 4-letter word or Team Extreme, whatever, the guys who were flip and had no fear. Mm-hmm. That's really not me. I mean, I can do some of that stuff, but for me, I'm much better if I'm doing the version one or in Ring of Honor is doing the iconic thing. You know, I'm the larger than life, you know, almost delusional, iconic, you know, I'm great, or take whatever I've done that's really good and, like, you know, push that to the max and, like, hey, look at this. I've done, I know who I am, you know, and I feel like there's a victory in that. And it was good for us to split because Jeff was more of that guy. And when we come back together, it's even better because we're so much more well defined as characters.
Yeah, I think so. Even like, I know, like, I have twin daughters, and the big thing a couple years ago was split them up in school, because when they're together, it's hard for them to be individuals, and you guys always being together. But I'm sure, like, in the for a while there, it seemed like a tag team. When they split, there was always one guy that was, you know, Bret Hart, and one guy that was Jim Neidhart, the famous, you know, Michaels and Jannetty. You guys never had that. You both came and became your own specific characters. Was there ever a little bit of, like, of nervousness, though? Like, what happens if I go on my own and fail? And
I mean, a lot of people, I think, would imagine I would be the one that experienced that nervousness. But really, I, like, look forward to the challenge. Like, I wanted my chance to, like, prove myself and do stuff that was different. And I felt like, you know, once I got a chance to do that, especially during that Manitude version one, it was cool because a lot of things were clicking and I got an opportunity. So that I did really well out of the gates, you know what I mean? And it's just, the thing is, when people think about us becoming great as the Hardy Boys, I can't be thought as in that term because that is not exactly who I am as an individual performer. You know, Jeff is more that way, but I know the parameters of what I do and what is good.
Sure.
And as far as being nervous, I never had a fear of, like, oh my God, I'm going to fail. I just always had, like, you know, within me a passion, like, to prove myself.
Yeah, I am still
as good, sure, as, good sure. as I can be on my
own. But you always had a lot of ideas, and you're very much a hustle, like you said, so I never really thought that was going to happen. I knew you'd go do your thing and you'd go do yours. Now, you mentioned you work with Undertaker, Jeff. Obviously a huge honor. You guys tore the house, and I specifically remember that. And then shortly after, you disappeared. You were gone from the WWE. What was the reasons for that? Was that issues? Substance issues?
Definitely substance
attitude issues.
Yeah, addiction.
Addiction.
Addiction, yeah. And went away for a while. I had to get straight, man. And luckily, you know, they tried to send me to rehab, but I didn't want to do it. I wasn't ready for it then. Continued to be addictive, you know, and then went to TNA for a little while. That didn't work out because I was still addicted. And then I got straightened out, man, just out of nowhere. I knew if I didn't stop, it was going to kill me, basically. So I just had to stop, and I'll never forget feeling confident enough to go to Norfolk, Virginia to a SmackDown, I believe. I don't know what year it was, but and see what I could do, if there was a chance that I might could come back. And it was a struggle, but they gave me the chance, man. And luckily, you know, I was given that chance, and I made it work.
Is this something that you had to talk to Vince about? Or?
Oh, yeah, Vince and Johnny, yeah, basically. And then they gave me the chance, and 3 years into, you know, everybody knows, two suspensions. Almost never a third, but I finished 3 years, and then I didn't re-sign. But it was a long, rough road, man.
It's tough being on the road, man. I mean, people don't understand that, you know. In this world, this life is harder than being in a rock band, for example, because you get time off. You go on the road for, you know, 3-4 weeks. You get 3-4 weeks off. We never get time off. It never ends. Yeah. And there's, you know, I just came back last week, and this week I've driven 800 miles already. From New York City to here. You forget that. Like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? You know?
It's a grind.
It's easy to kind of lose yourself and get involved with things you shouldn't, you know, and it does affect you. But I don't ever blame anybody in this job because, you know, you hear back about, like, in the 80s, you know, those guys used to work 300 days a year and all addicted to drugs and on pills. Like, I would have been too. Are you kidding me? Yeah. For that type of a schedule?
Yeah.
It's insane, right?
Yeah.
So what was it that you were addicted to? Pills?
Pills mainly, yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So was it hard to get off of it?
I mean, it just took me a long time, and it took me ultimately in 09, September of 09, getting arrested and, you know, getting charged with all these felonies and everything, and getting in some serious trouble that went on for 2 years. Thank God TNA gave me a job that helped me out so much that I could work during all this, you know, stressful time, and it helped with the, you know, me working and all that it was terrible, man. Just leaving WWE and then a few weeks later getting arrested, it was just, oh my God.
Wow. And then you actually had to do some jail time for that, too.
I got out easy. I did 10 days and 3 years probation, but all that's behind me. I'm done with everything. And it's just, but yeah, it was a long road of recovery for me. But I mean, when you look at the big picture,
sure.
Ultimately, it took me getting in trouble to actually set my ass straight.
And that's pretty cool that you said TNA kind of stood behind you.
It saved me, man. It saved me, you for know? Sure. Yeah.
We're talking to Matt and Jeff Hardy, the Hardy Boys, Team Extreme. Now, they're both wrestling solo for TNA Impact. But coming up, we're going to talk about winning titles in both WWE and ECW. We'll hear about Jeff's new music projects. And you know what else I'm asking? The Talk is Jericho Standard. Favorite matches of all time. More Hardys coming up.
Good old JR Jim Ross here, and Stan Hansen, the legendary bad man from Borger, Texas, is on the Ross Report. But don't worry, folks, got the bull rope and tuned him back at home. But he's going to tell us how it was in the wild and crazy world of territory wrestling, how he became a mega star, and the challenges that he dealt with in Japan, the legendary Stan the Lariat Hansen, right now on the Ross Report at podcastone.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Talk is Jericho.
We're back with Matt and Jeff Hardy. So tell us about working in TNA in comparison to working in WWE. Because you pretty much have been there on and off, but one of the cornerstones of the company. And to this day, still, if not the most popular guy on the show, one of the top two, depending on who else is there. How was it going from, you know, WWE to TNA, which is just kind of a fledgling startup company?
It was weird, but I really see it as this. I mean, you know, there's two worlds here, and naturally, WWE is the huge world, but TNA is this little other planet, you know, that exists in pro wrestling. And I mean, it's just a part of me. I mean, I'm a professional wrestler. I don't think it matters where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to wrestle the same and be the same. And in TNA, I've really evolved way better than I thought I would as far as remaining unique and performing. I'm like smarter than ever in the ring at what I do. But yeah, just smaller crowds, you know. I don't work as many shows, and I love my schedule now.
They're giving you a good platform,
too. Oh, God,
too.
I have a 3-year-old daughter, too, and you know that's you know how that is.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my, you know, light of the day and everything. It's just I got a lot of time off with my family, and when I work, I go hard, and I have a lot of time off to heal, and it's just perfect for me right now.
Now, how was it for you, Matt, when Jeff was going through these things? You were still in the WWE at that time. Were you worried about your brother, but you still got to pay attention on your game and still keep kicking ass on your end?
Yeah, no, I was absolutely worried. I mean, you know, because I was there with him through thick and thin. I knew everything that was going on, and all I could do was be there to help, you know, and I would do whatever I could. I offered my services in many ways, and I was going to stand behind him regardless of what happened or what was going on. And like you said, man, he just evolved. Like, he evolved after he left WWE during that time he was in TNA. When he came back to WWE, he was on his game, and then, you know, he got hurt or whatever, and, you know, just things happen, you know, the insanity of this business. But, like, right now, the evolution of him, he is, I know from him being the most unpredictable person I've ever met in my life, being my family, he's the most responsible person I know now. It's unbelievable, the transformation. Like, people wouldn't believe it. Like, if you could just put a camera on him 24/7, you wouldn't believe how responsible and how good he is. And, you know, it just, his daughter's made a huge difference. I know that. And he's just so dedicated to his family, and he's just so dedicated to, like, being good now. And it's just, it's amazing. It's cool to see. It's also very inspiring to see.
Well, let's talk about you guys becoming world champions. I mean, once again, the two kids that come from the tobacco farm in Cameron, North Carolina, Reynolds, and you both end up being world champions. I mean, when was your first run? Was as the champion? Was it when you came back?
As tag team champion?
No, world champion.
Oh, world champion.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, when I came back.
In like 07,
06, 07, 08, something like that.
Because when you came back, I remember the Royal Rumble. I had just come back in 2008, and I think I worked with Bradshaw, and you worked with Randy Orton. And you were the most popular guy in the company, more than Cena, more than anybody.
Agreed.
Oh, wow.
You know, by far. I mean, it was amazing to see, you know, once again, you just came waltzing in, Jeff Hardy, what's up, man, how you doing? And boom. How was it for you to become the world champion?
Oh, it was great. It reminds me of I was a year into my deal or something, and I just, myself and Umaga, the Great American Bash.
Unbelievable matches, by the way. How good was Umaga, man?
Too good, man.
Damn, he was good.
He was so good.
Wow, he was good.
By far one of the funnest guys for me to put a match together with, to get in there and tear it up.
Great matches.
He was a great athlete, and he knew who he was so well.
He knew his character so well. Yeah.
And when you vibe with somebody else, you know, the feeling, the chemistry, you know, it was just such a good vibe. But yeah, leading up to winning the world title was just a dream come true for sure.
I mean, who did you beat for the title? Was it Orton?
It was Edge and Triple H. And
a three-way.
I did the Swanton on Edge, I believe, and pinned him. One, two, three. And then, and then there it was. I'm the champion. It was unbelievable, man.
Yeah.
It was just, it was one of those surreal moments.
It's very surreal. I remember the first time I won it was in State College. And it was kind of a screw job thing, Earl Hebner fast
that.
Count.
And I remember
that
very well.
Got stripped of it like after the commercial break. But for that 15 minutes before I got stripped, I remember thinking, like, if the world ends right now, it ends with me being the last world champion. I can take it. I remember looking at
You're in the books.
That's why I'm in the books, man. Just looking in the mirror with the title on, just like no one's around, like, I did it, you know, and then and then go back to work again. But and how about for you too, Matt, with becoming the ECW world champion, which was, I know, was a huge deal for you as well.
Yeah, it was just, it was nice to be honored, you know, especially especially in that environment, you know, because I felt like I had done well on my own. And for me too, you'll get this probably more than most people do. It's also tough when you're trying to break out of that, because like when we were split, you know, Vince and company, Jeff was the guy, you know, they thought, well, both these guys are good, but you know, like he's
X Factor,
you know, but you know, going forwards, I was always still taken care of and always worked hard to do whatever. And you know, once I went to ECW and I won that title. I mean, for me, and this is how I think of it, and I think this is how you have to think of it. It's like we both won Oscars. They were just in different categories. You know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah.
And
that is a good point. It is like winning an Oscar.
It is.
It might not even be your best performance, but you get the Oscar.
I mean, it's just one of those. It's a reward to show your hard work and your dedication, and you're a great performer. You know, in many ways. And wrestling is winning a title in wrestling is so much like winning an Oscar. You know, not always the best person gets the Oscar.
Yeah.
You know, but the person who they choose and the person who's the most popular, whatever it may be, ends up getting it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was very cool, and it was very rewarding to see that I was still being remembered, especially around this time when Jeff was starting to be red hot. I mean, he was white hot, you know, like you said, he was the hottest guy in the company. And then even the chance to work together and for us to work on that stage of WrestleMania was awesome. That was another childhood dream of ours.
What year was that?
WrestleMania 25.
So, okay, 08 or something like that or whatever. Yeah. Oh, yes, childhood dream, right?
08 or not. I mean, we had two dreams as children. Like, one was to be the tag team champions. We did that 7 times. And then the other one was to wrestle each other. WrestleMania, we got to do that too. So, you know, like, if we would have just won the world tag team titles one time, like you said before, like, oh, my God, we've done it. You know, we're such big fans, such big marks. I remember after we won the titles, we, like, wore them home that night. We were so excited because we fulfilled our dream.
Wore them to the bar.
Yeah, right? and it's just one of those things. Like that, you feel like you've succeeded. You've done it. If we hadn't done anything else past that, we would have achieved our dream. You know, everything else was extra credit. And I feel like we did pretty good. You know, from that point on. But it's just nice to be recognized, especially as a single competitor. And I took a lot of pride in that. Like, I wanted to make ECW as good as I could. I mean, Christian, Jay, you know, we fought a lot of the same battles in the same way. And Jay's awesome. He's so good. And never given the total
underrated
credit.
Underrated,
never given the true credit that he deserves, I think, as a performer, because I feel like he's one of the best guys I've ever been in the ring with. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, we both took a lot of pride in being the ECW champion. Like, okay, this is a brand, even though it's like the redheaded stepchild, we're going to make the most out of it, and we want to make it great and make it good. And I felt like we both did it.
Hey, world champions,
we both did
champion,
a good job.
You know? And
sure.
Did you beat Christian for the title?
No, I beat Mark Henry. It was in a scramble match.
Gotcha.
Whenever I wanted, actually. I'd beaten Mark a couple times, and we went to a scramble match. It was the first ever scramble match they had. Did you do one of those?
I won a title in the scramble match,
too. You know?
And you're like, what the hell was
Look
that?
Look at that. We're scramble brothers.
Yeah. I think that was a short-lived one pay-per-view idea.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, this is stupid. Get rid of this.
That damn WCW branding. No.
Winning the other, the world championship.
Because you've been world champion, I think, Edge, three times.
Winning the other one, three times against Edge in that ladder match, was because that was the one I'd always admired and loved and wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Flair years ago first broke that out back in the WWF days.
The big gold belt.
Oh, yeah. I see that title.
That's the coolest title ever. But when I won that one is when, you know, Punk cashed. So I guess I was champion for like 15 seconds.
Oh.
It was one of those moments.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it counts.
Regardless, it counts.
Yeah.
And I was for a moment.
Yeah, that's funny, that world title, the Flair title. That one, when I won the Undisputed Championship, it was the Flair title, and then remember the Eagle title that Hogan had, like the classic?
That was a cool one.
And they got rid of that one, too, and it's like, wow, man, that new title they have now, it's like, it looks kind of lame, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, but still, those classic titles, those classic belts still mean something, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, especially to us, who grew up as kids,
watching
it, and those were the titles, like, oh, my God.
Yeah, this totally.
This is the Holy Grail, you know, and have it later down the road.
Now, Jeff, we mentioned Jeff went back to TNA, and you were still in WWE, and then you had your own problems where you kind of went off the deep end, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just towards the end of my WWE run, because I was there, I never had time off. You know?
Yeah, you never stopped.
I never stopped.
I don't remember either one of you guys ever really getting injured either.
I was out with a torn ACL.
Right,
I had my ACL torn and meniscus. Besides that, I worked regularly. Any other injuries I worked through.
And Jeff, how about you?
I've never been.
Remember that. It's amazing to think about it, all the stuff you've done.
It's insane.
Wow.
I mean, for him not to get hurt with the way he wrestles.
Well, both of you guys, so you had one injury where you're out for 3 months, 6 months?
I was out for 6 months.
Okay, so I mean, and, yeah, wow.
But you know, just
ratio.
The whole while, you know, from 97 to 2010, mm-hmm. you know, the length I was there, I was on the road. And I was also one of the guys that was one of the soldiers. Even though if I wasn't in the top spot, I was always on the road doing things.
Everything, yeah.
On everything, you know. And that's one thing I compliment you on, because you've been very smart at, like, working for a couple of years and then taking some time off, or now even as you get a little older, work for a run and then take some time
right.
off. It's just brilliant. Your body, your mind, and your, you know, your emotion, especially emotionally, mind. You need all that. Yeah.
You guys mm-hmm. both know mentally no you doubt. Have to oh, be yeah. there more than physically.
No doubt. No you doubt. And, you know, and for me, like, towards the end of my WWE run, like, whenever I had the feud against Jeff, I had almost like a tear in my abdominal area, and it was getting worse and worse. And for the longest time, I wore like three pair of boxer, you know, like tights,
like a girdle, but like a,
you know, just like the tight spandex shorts,
trying
you know?
To keep it locked
trying to
in,
keep it yeah. in, whatever. And then I just kept working through it because I was going to be working with him, and then if that worked, I was going to get to work with Cena for a while, and eventually, just like my body, it just. I had mm-hmm. to overcompensate for it, and it burst out, and I had to have surgery for this, for a torn abdominal muscle, and you know, almost like just a severe hernia, and then I broke my hand, and I just had a lot of injuries accumulating, mm-hmm. and then finally, I had to get out of WWE because I was at the point where I couldn't work or function without taking like a muscle relaxer or pain pill,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, and then I knew that was too much of an issue. I took time off. I asked for my contract. I was a disaster towards the end anyway. Mm-hmm. I just need to get away. I finally got out of my contract. I did that. I took a few months off, and then I ended up going to TNA because I was like, well, I'll be back with Jeff. The schedule will be lighter, but I was still like in the midst of it. I needed to, at that point, looking back, to take a year mm-hmm, and a half off mm-hmm. and let my body heal and recuperate.
And your mind heal.
And let my mind heal and emotionally heal as well, because you get in that groove and once you get into that position where you're hurt and your body is damaged and you start taking pills, that addiction does kick in. Mm-hmm. And it's like you have to take it so mm-hmm. you don't hurt mm-hmm. even worse, you know. And then finally, after I got fired from TNA, I deserved that. I had tried to stop taking pills on my own, and I did. I weaned down to nothing from the only things I ever took. It's funny because people go like, oh, my God, I must take all kinds of drugs. You know, we're like muscle relaxers and a pain pill. And then, like, I weaned myself off of them, and a friend said, I couldn't sleep for 2 or 3 days. A friend said, oh, you know what? You should try these. It's like over-the-counter Xanax. I think it would help you sleep, whatever. And I got some of those, and it was the worst thing I ever did because it was almost like a bath salt. It was like an over-the-counter deal. And that's what happened whenever I first got that DUI, whenever I had just crashed my car. I'd just taken those things and, like, made me paranoid and crazy. And, you know, and for a couple weeks, I don't even remember that period of 2 weeks, like, when I got in all my trouble and that stuff happened, because I was taking that stuff, trying to, you know, cycle off of what I was doing from just taking the regular pills, just trying to get back mm-hmm. in a sleep cycle, you know, or a natural cycle, a natural schedule. And, I was in legal trouble, so what I had to do was go to rehab, and it was good for me, too, just to kind of get some time away. And, you know, I finally got through all that, and then I just matured, and I finally caught up with myself. Okay, I'm not the wrestling rock star. I'm a normal human being. I can perform this and do this on that mm-hmm. level, but I have to realize what I have to do to take care of myself, because it's so easy, as you said before, to get caught up in that world, especially if you're passionate. You're trying to do anything to fight through to perform on this level or physically continue to go, and it's not the right decision.
Well, you too. I mean, you've always been very viral. You know, you've always been very social media savvy. Remember, the Hardy Show was a big hit before there was ever really any kind of web series or anything like that. I think you guys are still selling them on DVD maybe or something like that.
The Hardy Show just came back too, by the way.
It just came back? All right. But now is it on YouTube?
It's still going to be on the Hardy Show website. Where you
okay, there you go.
So watch
it's online though. But I remember you were posting like these really bizarre videos, and the one was just grapes. You remember the grapes? You're just eating. I'm going to eat grapes.
People, the grapes. It's amazing how over I got those grapes.
I'm sure.
From a dark period in their life. Yeah. You know
what was it?
It was Matthew.
Oh yeah, Matthew. That was your alter ego.
But because it's yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean, we're laughing about it. It's pretty sad. But now that we're on the other side, it's pretty funny.
Of course it is. I mean, that's all you can do is like live and learn.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but it was one of those things. Like you said, I was trying to be, you know, viral, creative, different, but I was in the wrong mindset because I wasn't thinking with a clear mind. You know, obviously.
Man. Do people ever throw grapes at you when you're in the ring?
No, they haven't yet. But you know,
they should.
You'll get a lot of those. Kevin Steen is great. You know, just like the other day, I posted a really funny picture. I did a TV show pilot. I did a TV show pilot. It was called Indie Wars. It was like American Idol with independent wrestlers.
Oh, cool.
It was amazing. Like, right, I hope it gets picked up. It'd be the greatest concept ever. I did it with my buddy Nick Searcy, who's on Justified, and a couple other guys who do some reality TV and acting. And then Kevin Steen, I posted a picture where this fan who looked like Kevin, except he was like 100 150 pounds heavier.
Big guy.
I was like, oh, I said, it was really sad to see Kevin Steen go from Honor, even though we never got go from Ring of Honor, even though we never got along. It was an emotional goodbye. You know, I'm like, I'm shaking his hand, like, oh my God, it's so sad. You know, and I put it in this picture, as it went viral. And Kevin had tweeted me back. He said, I don't know. He said, that's not me. He said, it looks like you're hallucinating again. Are you eating grapes again? You know, which was a great tweet. You know, he would always go to that, like, grape is substituted for pills.
Well, oh, is that what it was? You're eating grapes instead? Is that why you had the.
No, that was never my plan. But, looking back in hindsight, it kind of fits. Period of.
But what was the idea behind the grapes? Just out of your mind, and just grapes was a thing to do?
I think, honestly, I had grapes that day as opposed to bananas at home. So, you know, grapes got the call. They got the big shot, brother.
Yeah.
The call. No, there was not like some master plan behind it.
Yeah.
It was just somebody who was, you know, who was burnt out, who needed to physically, emotionally, mentally heal, who was trying to still be creative, and I was in the wrong state of mind to be doing it.
So now, you know, like you said, you guys kind of create your own schedule now. Both of you guys are out of the WWE, working in TNA, working in Ring of Honor. How is it to be, like we mentioned, just how crazy that WWE schedule is? Over, never ends. Could you guys ever see yourself going back to that type of a grind? Or are you happy doing things the way you're doing it now, calling your own shots on your own schedule?
I certainly wouldn't want a full time schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if I could pop in and do a little something here and there, and it's funny because, like, just going through the things I've done, just like Jeff said too, with Responsible, like, even with, I'd worked with ROH, and I guess I can say it on this podcast right now, because I did the TNA TVs, I know the Ring of Honor people that do the booking and everything, they want me there, but Sinclair felt uncomfortable.
The TV station that runs
They felt uncomfortable with me being on the TNA programming. So I'm still doing TNA TVs going forward. So I'll probably be doing more TNA going forward than ROH. But still, like, I enjoy this deal where I'm a true independent contractor and kind of do my own dates and make my own schedule. And, you know, like, there's little gigs I do, TV show or appearance-wise, that I can still do. I don't have to clear with anyone except myself. But, you know, just looking back now, like, I pride myself on being, like, the perfect employee. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I'm very straight up. I'm very honest. And, you know, I went through dark times, and he did too, but, like, I mean, we both came out the back end so much better, for, you know what I mean? And sometimes it's easy to lose yourself in the insane lifestyle and in the passion and in the whole vibe and environment of being in that rock star status.
Yeah, group, really. I mean, it's happened to all of us, you know? How about you, Jeff? I mean, and how do you feel now? You said you love your schedule. You got a three-year-old daughter.
For sure, I don't want that schedule at all. But down the road, you know, years down the road, I don't know. I might feel like it. I might not. But, I mean, I could see me wanting to again. I do. You know, I watch Raw, and I miss the universe, you know, just those crowds and the excitement. But now, no. But I don't know. Maybe down the road. I'm not sure.
Do you still do a lot of your art? I mean, I remember you did the aluminummies. You had a giant aluminum kind of creature that was hanging above your house. I mean, how was
it? Yeah, all that, man.
20 feet tall or something like that?
Oh, yeah, it was huge. And all that pretty much burnt down back in, you know, 08.
Oh, when your house burned down, yeah.
Before we did that, all that crazy-ass storyline with Jack and all that. But
with your dog, yeah.
But, yeah, but the land, we rebuilt and still used the same well just right down the hill. And I still paint and write. That's about it. Mm. I hadn't built no aluminummies. I do need to fix my mailbox up, though. It looks horrible because it's kind of became like a tourist attraction
for your mailbox,
Jeff Hardy fans. Yeah,
what
but
is
now there's
it?
Tree. It's just an aluminum. It's it's a crazy ass looking statue growing up with a tree and a vine.
But that's it. And how about you? How about Paroxygen? Still doing?
Started recording the new stuff, and I'm starting to sing some. And oh my God! And Del Oliver he's been pushing me, but the new stuff is light years better than the album that was out, because I'm pretty much just talking on that the first album. It's not really, you know, I was in my safe zone, but now I'm kind of getting out of that zone, which is very exciting. The new stuff is way better.
And the record's released through TNA.
Yeah, through TNA. They put the first one out. Not sure what we're going to do. We're six tracks into the new one. I'm not sure what we're going to do with that. If it's going to be through TNA or we're going to go our own route, I'm not sure yet. But we may do 10. We may just do 7. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And it was cool to hear, because I know that's always been a love and a passion of his. Like, I was really impressed with it, you know. So
I like
cool.
The one that I think I even might have texted you with, that you were using as your ring song. I can't remember what it was called when you were using it in TNA. You came out to it one of your songs.
We've started, man. When I first went there, I've done 6 total now. Every year at Bound for Glory, we do a new one.
Okay,
it's crazy and kind of ridiculous, but like nobody's ever done it. So therefore,
no, but that's cool though, man. Like you said,
because it's a huge hobby for me. Just over the years, writing these songs, and we start, and they all kind of tell a story relating to my career. The first one was Modest. It was all about making it big, but then staying cool and calm and modest. And The second one was when I did the hill turn, which was another me. It was all about a different side of me, and we used that song. The third one was Resurrected after my experience and let down at Victory Road 2011 when TNA gave me a second chance to come back. I was Resurrected. That one was one of my favorites, called Resurrected. Similar Creatures was the next year, just you know, for all my fans. And then this past Bound for Glory, it was Time and Fate. So yeah, it's been a new one. And even when Willow broke on the scene, man, we threw a song together quick for that, and I actually played piano on it, which is
cool,
the first
man.
Thing. And it's such a simple little piano.
It's all right,
but it came together so quick. And
is this all on iTunes? Available on iTunes?
I think it is. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I think it is. Okay, a couple more things. I'll ask a couple more of these names. Who's Wildo Jinx?
Well, I think that was our tag team.
WWE. We actually, when we were doing jobs in a pursuit for us to get a contract or a real job, we said, hey, we also have this masked, masked characters we do. And it was Will of the Wisp and Ignis Fatuus. Our tag team name was Jinx.
Okay.
I don't know how well you know
they
these
did
concepts.
Call me Wildo.
Will of the Wisp and Ignis Fatuus are kind of like the same thing in two different cultures.
I used to play Dungeons and Dragons, so I know Will of the Wisp is like a creature in the woods that you're not supposed to follow, like a little light in the
some
woods
kind of
or something.
Yeah,
Fosfor's gas.
Yeah, it's the guy, the little light.
Could kill you.
But Jinx was the name of our tag team.
Okay.
And we gave him this information, and they put us on TV, and you know, he held up his hand in the ring like we're still just job guys, even with the mask. We're so disappointed. We're going, you're going to ruin our mask gimmick. And they called him Wildo, and I was Ingus. As opposed to Will of the Wisp and Ignis Fatuus.
These guys were actually on WWE TV.
Oh, yeah, they were. Yeah. We wrestled the Harris twins.
Nice.
It was sweet. Yeah.
What was your name? Ignis?
Ignis Fatuus, yeah, on TV, it was Ingus.
Ingus.
Ingus and Wildo. All we needed was a Beulah as a manager. We'd had the worst names ever. Wildo, Ingus, and Beulah.
How about Mean Jimmy Jack?
Oh, that was me. That was Matt and I both had these, no, or with the GM, country characters, kind of a Western style.
Yeah, Mean Jimmy Jack was you. It was like Jimmy when we did the trampoline wrestling. He had a character. He wore a hat. He wore a gimmick mustache.
Yeah, that's right. It's Mean Jimmy Jack Tompkins, and I'm coming to get you, boy.
And I tried to take it all the way and put in a big pack of Red Man chewing tobacco. I got choked on the way to the ring. I was like 12 out there chewing tobacco.
All right, Matt, let's go through yours. Evil Knievel.
Yeah, it was a motocross four-wheeler.
And that's evil spelled E-V-I-L, like you're, yes. you're mean.
Yeah,
you're,
but
you were a baby face.
I actually, I was a big baby face.
And I
wrestled with a big helmet on and goggles, and my finish was I'd hit the ropes and come off with a headbutt.
Helmets were legal.
Helmets were legal. I'd come off with a big headbutt to the sternum, and that was the finish.
What about the Grim Reaper?
The Grim Reaper was the Grim Reaper, as you can imagine. It was
a cloak, hood,
a little. I think it was a ski mask, but we covered it up with the big hood.
Okay.
So that way they didn't step on the executioner's toes because they actually wore the ski mask.
Got the executioner here. Yeah. Ignis Fatuus, high voltage. Okay. How about the White Cheetah?
The White Cheetah was a total ode to Macho Man Randy Savage, who was my favorite wrestler. I mean, the guy who inspired me.
But why would it be the White Cheetah? that's like an ode to Tiger Mask or something.
That's a great question, Chris. It was the White Cheetah because the first pair of Zubaz I had were cheetah print.
Oh, okay.
And I had this pair of Zubaz.
Going back to the Zubaz.
And I was like, you know what? I can get away with it because Macho Man would wear those sometimes.
Sure.
In interviews. He would wear those. And then I had a white bandana. So I wrestled. I came out with I think it was just a bed sheet. Like it had fringes on it.
Okay, to whisper that. Can't say that too loud in North Carolina.
It's a bed sheet. Kayfabe. You know, and I came out and I was holding it with the tassels around the bed sheet, spinning around like Macho Man. Then I would take it off, and then I had the head man and the deal. And it's funny because typically we wanted our personas to look so different from. We were so concerned about this because we didn't want our demographics to know it was us. We wanted like Wolverine, Jeff Hardy, and High Voltage Matt Hardy to look different from their alter egos. But White Cheetah wasn't a big stretch. I just had the bandana on. They probably would have recognized it was me because I didn't have like any mustache or anything.
It's like Clark Kent with the glasses.
Yeah.
Superman, what? I don't recognize.
Gregory Helms in the Hurricane.
One of those promos now. Oh, my God. They were great.
Yeah. What about the Rahway Reaper?
That's funny. That's something I did in PWS, Pro Wrestling Syndicate.
Rahway, New Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's from Rahway, New Jersey. But there's a group there, and they did a thing where they had like a student's battle royal.
Uh-huh.
They had a guy that had been the champion for a while, and they were going to give me the big push, brother. I was going to get a run with the title, trying to bring business up.
This was pre-WWE?
This was
giving me the title.
2012, yeah, give me a run with the title, brother.
They back on the scene.
They were going to do what's hashtag best for business. Hashtag. And they had like a student's battle royal, and I was dressed up like in a Grim Reaper outfit. It was around Halloween. and I wore this, and I performed badly. I did like left whackers to the back, and then I won the match. And then the champ's like, "Oh yeah, well you're gonna get your match now." And then I beat him with a twist of fate and took my gig. I'm like, "Oh, it's Matt Hardy." You know, the place they go banana.
You guys always had cool names for your moves too. It was like I couldn't keep track of all of them. I remember trying to call moves on the fly, and it's like I don't know what, like a spin cycle and twist of fate, and there's the willow, the whisper in the wind,
poetry in motion. And that legitimately popped you.
The Hardy Act arrest. Yeah.
And at one point, I remember Vince told Kevin, and he said, "Tell those boys to stop naming all those moves, damn it."
Yeah, because you have to
too many names.
The Irish whip. Like, here's the Hardy stretch. Oh, yeah. What is this, you know?
The coolest was that poetry in motion, though, when I think, who said that for the first time?
Michael Cole. That's where you get it from.
Wow, that was when I just
said his best, biggest contribution to the wrestling industry.
It was like poetry in motion. I thought, wow, that's a perfect name for that move.
And that was where you jumped off of Matt's back, right? Yeah.
Even now and then the one off Matt's back to the floor, I named Poetry and Mayhem. So
Go bigger. Next time, instead of looking at your old names, I'll have to look up all the names of your moves and have to get you to explain them all to me.
Right. <Yeah.
laughs> So last question, and this is a hard one, but if you had to pick one match that stands out as your favorite, which one would you choose? What do you think, Matt?
That's always a tough question, man.
It is,
and I'm sure it is for you too, because there's so many things that are like, you know, sentimental to you personally that you really dig and love.
If there's a few of them, you have some that pop in your head.
Yeah, you know, the honest to God, the first one that pops in my head was probably the cage match with Edge, because it was such an emotional, passionate feud, you know, and there's so many people were into it because it was real on some levels, and some levels it was pro wrestling. But, you know, just having that match and doing that leg drop off the top of the cage,
insane.
Which so many people remembered, like, you know, I paid for that years down the line.
I'm obviously. Sure you did.
That's why I became the most boring high flyer in the history of the business and changed the leg drop into a hoe, drop an elbow to the back of the neck. You know,
because, you're the most boring high flyer, and Jay's the ugliest pretty boy.
Yeah, I say that all the time, too. Yeah.
Christian, the ugliest pretty boy.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm the most boring high flyer in the history of the business. But yeah, that match was really special, and I thought we made magic that night. It was really, really good. You know, other matches that stand out were the first time we won the tag team titles. I mean, that was our dreams.
From Edge and Christian?
From the Acolytes. The first time we won them, it was against the APA. The TLCs were special. They stand out because that was just revolutionary matches. I also dug the match we had at WrestleMania 25. That was real special because that was always our dream too, you know. But there's a lot of matches that were great. The first one that probably stands out more than anything else is that cage match, just because it was so dynamic and so intense and so passionate. And, you know, it was just that moment where, as a single star, it was just like a huge win and the culmination of a big moment.
Right. How about you, Jeff?
I'm going to go with the first tag team ladder match with Edge and Christian, because it was just such a turning point for us. And I'm going to try to be clear, when I mentioned motocross and the comparison earlier, that's where it comes from. Whatever that is, when I have this big vision and I want to conquer it, like whether it's jumping off a ladder, off a scaffold, or going through a table in a certain way, I mean, that's comes from wanting to complete this jump that's so far. You know, I can do it, but can I? But once you commit to leave that jump, you know, there's no turning back.
That's right.
So with that ladder match, we had all these visions, man, and just getting out there in front of a huge, great crowd and conquering that vision of whatever it might have been, the seesaw, and hearing those reactions. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like that, man, especially being so young and getting the chance to do what we were really good at. That is tag team, as far as tag teams go, but singles, I would say, that Undertaker heavyweight title match, just that was the perfect story of the underdog, you know, against the man, and almost coming so close and not winning, but God, that
you won. You won that night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because when Raw went off there, I'll never forget the scene of me like just looking at my fingers, like laying on the mat after,
like you had touched.
Yeah, continuously getting up, and it was just great. Yeah. So yeah, solo wise, I would say Undertaker, and tag wise, cool. Edge and Christian, that first ladder match.
Well, guys, it's been great having you, man. I'm glad we're able to do this. It's good to reconnect. Always been two of my favorite guys, and it's good to see you guys again.
You too, man. Thanks for having us, and this was a lot of fun. It was real cool to sit down and kind of catch up and talk shop with you, talk history.
Yeah,
a lot of fun, man. Always is.
Good memories, man. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you.
Thanks to Matt and Jeff Hardy. Two amazing episodes. It was Hardy, Boys Week here on Talk is Jericho, and I think they delivered above and beyond what I expected. Thank you for listening, and thank you for coming to see Fozzy. We're underway doing a bunch of headlining shows in between the dates with Theory of a Dead Man. Like I said, we've got San Antonio tonight, tomorrow the big festival in Shreveport. Tuesday, we're going to be heading to Atlanta at Center Stage. So many big gigs coming up. And another cool thing was that this week, The Sandpaper video, which we released just under 2 years ago, hit 1 million views on YouTube. Go Google Sandpaper Fozzie and watch the video. Do you like Evil Dead? It's an Evil Dead homage, the famous Bruce Campbell movie, which I actually named my son Ash after Bruce Campbell's character in Evil Dead. And we based the video for Sandpaper on Evil Dead movie. So go check it out. Over 1 million views for this video and for this song. So why don't we play it right now? Let's check out the song. If you haven't heard Sandpaper, this is from our last record, Sin and Bones. If you like the tune, go check it out on Amazon or on iTunes and go watch the video on YouTube. Here we go, Sandpaper.
A cat scratch, a whiplash, a witch hunting black. Sandpaper.
Sandpaper tears in my skin. What in the state of it?
You like it? Hit us up on the Twitter at Fozzie Rock and let me know what you think. If you like it, go check it out on Amazon. Also, my third book, if you like the first two books, the third one is coming out October 14th. The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea. I'm going to be doing some appearances and signings for that. I'll release all the dates very, very soon. I might even read some passages from the upcoming book just for you here on Talk is Jericho. You can pre-order it at Amazon, and if you do, use my Amazon links. Easiest way to support the show, easy to find, go to podcast1.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links in the UK, the USA, and Canada. Every time you do that, Amazon kicks back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free for twice a week. No extra fees or hidden charges. You're just getting your shopping done and you're helping me out in the process. So thank you so much for subscribing. Talk is Jericho. If you haven't yet, just go to that subscribe button at iTunes and press it. So easy, then you'll never miss an episode, right? Okay, that's it. Another exciting, exciting show. In the meantime and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs. We will see you next week for another two-parter with director and pop culture icon Kevin Smith. He's directed so many great films: Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Jersey Girl, so many killer movies, and his new movie Tusk has come out this week. Kevin is back on the big screen, and man, can this guy talk. One of my favorite episodes of Talk is Jericho, a two-parter with Kevin Smith, coming up next week. So come back and join us. We'll see you then. Come on down. See you next week, and a big yeah, boy.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Syria Peace Talks? I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. Syrian rebels have rejected peace talks being proposed by Russia. They're accusing Moscow of failing to pressure its ally, President Bashar Assad, to end the conflict. Christmas may be over, but the shopping isn't. Hazel Ginn was at Macy's Herald Square in New York today.
It's not too bad. Even we went up to the ninth floor, and we managed to get in a queue of about four deep, so not bad. Yeah, and then we went to another one, and it was only a couple, so we kind of timed it well, I think.
America's research group, which focuses on consumer behavior, projects holiday sales up about 5% this year. Harley-Davidson is placing a renewed emphasis on teaching people to ride as part of its efforts to attract more customers. The company is expanding the number of dealerships with a Harley Riding Academy. The move comes as the industry grapples with years of declining sales and an aging customer base. I'm Ben Thomas.